Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR Newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. Welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Mark, do we have a special offer for listeners?
Okay, let's continue to offer it. It's at VRTrader.com. That's my newsletter website. And if you go to the promo code section for any of the newsletters, if you enter 2022 half off, just as it sounds, 2022 HALFOFF 2022 half off, you get 50% off for any of our subscriptions for whatever time frame you select. And also, I like to use the opportunity to disclose I am not a financial advisor, nor do I provide financial advice. Thank you.
How would you describe what's happening on the stock markets right now?
It's a somewhat traditional year-end rally, pretty much tied to the seasonal patterns this time of year. Seems to have coordinated really nicely with the full moon the last few days and cycles that occur at this time of year, and we turned up also in the midst of a lot of bad news, and which is somewhat typical during October type crashes, but I'm not making more of it than a seasonal rally. Some would argue that this is the beginning and a resumption of a bull market, which really didn't exist. It was a grand deception this past year or so when people talk about how well the market did, when really it was only truly seven stocks on NASDAQ. And if you look at the S&P equal weighted index, we're already back to the lows of last March, with 75% of the stocks below the 200-day moving average, which is a key moving average for money managers and traders in terms of determining a bull or bear cycle. And the same thing for NASDAQ, I think it's about 75% that are below the 200-day, only 25% above. So, everybody was all excited today, Thursday, about Apple's earnings and Apple this and Apple that. It's like the whole market lives and breathes around Apple Computer because it's such a widely held stock. Meanwhile, it's come off its highs, may have topped out for a period of time. Not to say it's going perpetually down, but, it's had a big run. They've had some problems with China and so forth, too, with production, I believe. But I think it's down in the aftermarket, and all day it was up, and that's all the commentators and the media could talk about. It's just really this nonsense about the whole market circulating around, one stock or seven stocks, the leading names, Netflix and Tesla and Microsoft and the old Facebook, Meta, they call it now. It's just a grand deception to investors. Most stocks really haven't done well. The S&P 3000, which is not even talked about, and I've mentioned this before, which represents, I think, 98% of all investable securities, more than half of those stocks were down in the last year. I think it's 53 to 55%, and then there's a bunch that were unchanged. So, the majority of the market has not done well. Yes, the index went up because it was weighted by seven stocks. And I guess if you owned the index and you were able to trade that, you did well. But if you were in individual stocks, you really didn't do that well, with some rare exceptions. So here we are. We're taking a bit of a bounce. I don't want to sound like a doom and gloomer, but we have, essentially World War III, I believe, already underway. I've said this before in my newsletter for the last year. I think it's more of a war cycle, and all that the media can talk about is the Federal Reserve and interest rates. And one of the reasons the market was up today is because apparently the street interpreted Jay Powell's comments yesterday as being a little bit more dovish, which I don't think is the case. I mean, we've got, 10-year bonds at, I think it's 5 or 10-year bonds. I don't have the number in front of me, 5%. Well, back in 1980, they got to 15%. And there's no reason why that scenario could not repeat itself in the months ahead, where rates go a lot higher and surprise everyone. And history actually says, when rates start to come down, Fed actually lowers rates. It usually is just ahead of a big market decline. In other words, the Fed lowers rates because something has happened, some outlier event or something has happened that forces them to lower rates, and that usually is a trigger for a collapse in the stock market. So this time around, they're hoping that they just overdid it. They're going to apologize for everybody. They're going to start dipping rates for political reasons, I suppose, because you got a presidential election next year, and that's going to provide fuel for the stock market, and it's overall going to explode to the upside. Now, I don't want to discount that. If, political pressures are really that great on Powell and the Federal Reserve, and they start bringing rates down, the street's going to have an orgasm over it. They're going to jump up and down. This is it, bull market, buy everything, and they probably will stage another, some type of rally. But I think it's going to be a deception, another false event. But I suppose as a trader, you could take advantage of it. So, again, I could be wrong. It's one man's opinion. You got conflicts around the world. There could be a false flag event of some kind where, God forbid, a U.S. ship is attacked and suddenly we're drawn into a more global event than what we're seeing right now. This happened in the past. A lot of false flags. The Gulf of Tonkin back in the 1960s was an event which brought us into the Vietnam War when our ship got attacked. I can cite a whole bunch of historical instances where you get these like false flag events that draw countries into war. So hopefully that doesn't occur. But I've been saying for the longest time, I mean, we're just sort of ignoring the world reality out there, and a lot of bad players, and not to mention the millions of immigrants illegally that cross borders here in the U.S. and the risk that violence could erupt here. Many of these are military age men. They were brought in, many known terrorists, and there could be, a lot of internal strife here in the U.S., possibly Canada as well, as these bad players start creating problems or attacking people or shooting people. I mean, I'm here in Arizona, and we see the reality of, these people crossing the border and what the risk could be for the country and for our personal safety. So a lot of things to talk about here, and whether this is going to be reflected in the stock market or ignored, time will tell, but we'll take it a day at a time. We went long the market a couple of days ago for a trade because of the seasonals, and it looked like a trading bottom, but we exited today on a trade because we just didn't want to wait for Apple and worry what was happening there. One concern you need to have is that, there may be few hedges against another big market sell-off, and that could come in 2024. So hopefully I'm wrong. Hopefully the plunge protection team or the Federal Reserve for political reasons or something gets involved and, takes prices up and makes everybody happy.
Bitcoin has had a huge rise. What's the story there?
Well, actually, we took a little trade in that today because it had a big run and everybody's talking about it, but I'm very bullish about it. And there are a couple reasons we've talked about. We've got the Larry Fink and BlackRock about to be approved, supposedly, for an ETF for Bitcoin. And that the stock, the GBTC, which is the current vehicle for trading Bitcoin, has been rallying. In fact, I think they just got approved to be converted into an ETF themselves. So that provides buying power for Bitcoin purchases, because when people buy an ETF, the managers of the ETF, they have to go and buy the real underlying commodity. So in time, it's going a lot higher. So if you're a long-term player, I would hold. We try to trade it a little bit. Bitcoin ETF, or the GBTC that is referred to, has rallied from $8 to $27. in the last few months, so it's almost tripled, but it's down from, I believe, $58 where it was when Bitcoin was up at $60,000 a coin. So and Ethereum also rallied. That's ETHE. There's an ETF for that as well. XRP, which is another crypto, is still way down from where it was, but it rallied from about 30 cents up to about 60 cents. And some people are really bullish on XRP, thinking that is a replacement in the banking system and might be widely accepted. And so that's also tradable. I mean, this little thing trades all over the place. So I guess you can buy it 30 cents and sell it at 50. If it dips from 60 to 40, and you can trade it if you like playing that kind of cheaper stuff. But the bulls think it could be a multi-dollar valued crypto in the future. And I don't know if that's the case or not. We just follow it and trade it, but that's another vehicle. So bottom line, positive. I'm more concerned about the digital coins that the government is experimenting with or testing right now, and the use of those and the replacement of our cash or checking account balances at some point where they're hopefully not surprisingly overnight converted, but converted to a coin where the government could track everything you do. So in one sense, I'm pro-crypto with regard to Bitcoin and all these other vehicles, but I'm anti-crypto with regard to the digitization of our currency and the replacement of cash and bank accounts with a digital coin, which infringes on our freedoms. So it's a mixed bag. Most people are probably complacent about it because they'll still see a coin in instead of an amount in their checking account, and the fact they could still use it will make them happy, but unrealizing that there's going to be control factors related to it. So it's a mixed bag for me, but in terms of general crypto acceptance, I mean, that's a matter of fact right now.
Is it a generational thing? Older people like cash because you can stuff it in a box. The government can't take it away if it's well hidden. Whereas younger people are used to digital everything, so to them, they can't see the need to maintain a cash system.
Right, right. And, you know, it's like saying not understanding why the U.S. Constitution permitted, you know, the bearing of arms, for example. You know, it's like, if you don't really know history and understand history, you want to keep the government out of your lives and protect yourself against your government if you can. That's what the freedom of to bear arms was originally created, you know, so we could deter our government from taking away our freedoms. So, you know, having a digital coin, I guess, you know, the young people don't understand history. Because you're losing your freedom when the coins are implemented, and the use and availability of cash separates you from the government and makes it more your actions and your freedom more independent, that you can't be supervised and controlled. And the government obviously has a quote-unquote war on cash. It's been going on for quite a while, where if you deal in cash in the banks or come in with cash or take out cash, you have to be reported. So, you know, they're worrying about that. Why? Because they claim it's because of drug dealing and everything else, but the truth is they just don't. They want to control what you're doing and monitor you, and with the ultimate goal of taking control completely in a totalitarian-type environment, which I think is the ultimate goal of the leftists around the world. So, yeah, the young people are naive. We already know they're naive because they're anti-Semitic and they're rallying against Israel because they've been brainwashed by college professors. Many of this was warned decades ago, what I saw on campuses. So, you know, what the young people are thinking now or how they're acting is not relevant of the truth or what the future may hold. So we have a lot of problems out there, you know, with brainwashed young people. And carrying into your question about the coins, yeah, naivety about what it means to have that coin, and you know, they will find out one day that something they buy or something they do with their digital coin won't be allowed, and they'll get reported, or their account will be closed down, or their money will be taken away from them because they did something that Big Brother didn't want them to do. And that's the ultimate risk of the digitization of the coin, of your money into coins like this. So That's what it's really all about. They're going to argue, oh, it's efficiency and it's a more practical way and you don't have to print cash, and they'll come up with a whole bunch of excuses. But what essentially is an element of control over the populace and monitoring what you're doing. So ultimately, I guess Big Brother will prevail, because nobody wants to take down the government and replace them with free-thinking people. I guess people that are, you know, more libertarian like myself, that don't want government involvement in your lives, but it is an issue with the younger generation.
Well, go read history books in your library. They're not distorted by special interest groups on the internet. You're more likely to get a better interpretation because you know who wrote it and when.
Right. Well, sometimes history is rewritten in these books, as you know.
They've, of course.
Many of the books that are in the educational system have been rewritten, and they're not really telling the truth, and the older books are not as available or, you know, it's as researchable as they used to be. And, you know, you even hear stories of book-burning type events where they just try to destroy evidence of anything. They want to rewrite the past and change things. So, yeah, you're going to have to do a lot. You have to be an independent thinker, more like you or myself, where we just do our own research and not rely on what we're being taught in the university or what we necessarily see on the internet or what we see in the bookstores, you know. So, you know, a lot of history is covered up. You know, you have to dig back to really find out a lot of stuff that really happened. It's not easily available in current books, unfortunately, because of the prejudice against certain, you know, things that are discussed in the books for whatever reason, whether it's, you know, related to Judaism or it's related to wars or it's related to, you know, racial issues. You know, suddenly great heroes of our past are condemned because of slavery or things that existed in their times, which at the times were accepted, and now are, you know, blacklisting people that are really great heroes in their own way or have, you know, had great deeds attributed to them. So, rewriting of history is one way to fascism, and unfortunately, we're starting to see that.
We'll have more with Mark Leibovit right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Mark Leibovit. Mark, what's going on with gold?
Well, I'm getting a little nervous about gold. I really like it. I think you've got to own gold because it's a tangible asset. It's like owning real estate or having farmland or things that are quote-unquote out of the system, where, you know, with this digitization of coins occurs, we have money outside the banks. And I very much encourage people to keep cash. I don't care if they declare it illegal or not. If you have to deal in the black market, that's fine. You know, you have to have some freedom and with some control of your finances. So I'm very much pro cash, no matter what the government says or doesn't say. But with gold is the same thing. It's something outside the system. There are a couple fears I have. You know, back in the 1933, FDR made gold illegal and forced the confiscation of gold. How can we argue that that won't happen again? Anything is possible. History could repeat itself. You know, the wrong people are in power at the wrong time, and suddenly they make it illegal. So you have to think about, you know, if you have your gold, where do you keep it? How do you avoid government confiscation in the event that ever happens? Do you keep it outside the country? Do you bury it somewhere? Whatever. So that's a risk, just like keeping cash, just in case something happens with regard to your inability to get to your money. And the other thing about gold is, you know, if the stock market sells off again and we get another big washout, you know, whether for geopolitical reasons or because of just the, you know, market sell-off, because of a bunch of reasons, we could come up with all kinds of scenarios where the stock market would crash and go back to recent lows. You know, we have a huge national debt. We've got all kinds of issues out there, a Fed that is uncontrollable, political forces and so forth. Gold could come down. In fact, during great market sell-offs, gold drops because why? People have to liquidate assets. Sometimes they have to, they're on margin and they have to, you know, sell stocks or they sell their gold stock related positions and that drives prices down. And, so history says that, you know, during bad times, during recent crashes, gold suffers. Doesn't necessarily go in the inverse direction. So it has to be viewed more as a hedge. And something you keep, you know, in the safe deposit box, which actually you can't do because they say that you can't keep gold in the safe deposit box and be safe, but, or secure, but, keeping it separate. Another thing is there's been a big divergence in the gold stocks. You know, many of the indexes that we track, you know, there's GDX, GDXJ, Nugget, JNUG, a lot of the ETFs and stocks that track the gold stocks are way underperforming. I mean, they're nowhere near their highs. You know, gold got over $2,000 an ounce in the past week or so. I think got to 2007, which is still way under the record high of 2070. But the gold shares are nowhere near there. And history sort of says that gold shares lead the way up, and they didn't do it this time, and they're still way under their highs. So it's worried me all along. I mean, I look at the gold chart. The chart looks like it could go up, retest, or take out the highs. Silver, a little less so, but similar. But the shares are just not kicking in, you know, and people argue, well, there's other reasons. You know, the cost of labor, the cost of fuel, the production of gold has, you know, sort of hurt profits. I think Newmont Mining had an issue with some you know, some project in South America where it got shut down, labor issues or political issues, and that's the biggest name out there. So it's way down. I think the stock's high was like 70. It gets that somewhere in the high 30s now. So, yeah, that's a divergence. So as a technician, that worries me. Why isn't gold shares participating or leading the way up? And again, it could be related to crude oil prices and labor and political reasons, but still that's not what history normally shows when you have a booming gold market. So I remember way back in the 1970s, ASA Limited was the big name, the South African name. I remember trading it even way back then, you know, as a leading barometer of the movement of gold itself. So, yeah, I'm just bringing it up. You know, maybe gold will go up without the shares, but that's sort of a warning flag. And, again, if we do get a market crash or sell-off for whatever reason, you know, financial reasons or geopolitical reasons, there's always that risk that gold could come down. But you shouldn't worry about it because you really got to keep money out of the system. So you got to, like I say, cash, real estate, gold, you got to have it anyway, but you may have to be aware that it's not impervious to the stock market.
What's going on with crude?
Well, crude is correcting a little bit now, which is sort of bullish for stocks because there's a little study that I saw that when the crude gets above $77 a barrel, it puts sort of pressure on the stock market, and that sort of happened here in recent weeks and months. When crude got up, the stock market went under a little, got a little, you know, queasy, I guess is the expression. And now when the crude oil pulls back as it's doing now, the stock market, you know, as a rule, has a little bit more impetus to go up. And the argument is that, you know, higher crude prices is a tax, effective tax on us because of the higher prices we pay at the pump and general production costs and so forth. So I think you're in a little bit of a correction here, but I'm maintaining a bullish posture. I'm definitely keeping Occidental Petroleum, which is one of our positions in our newsletter, partly because of Warren Buffett's huge position and partly because my belief that crude oil ultimately will go a lot higher, whether it has a little pullback cycle here or not. So it may pull back toward $75 a barrel, perhaps. It's now around 83. It could do that. But I'm looking for $200 a barrel in the you know, months or year or two or three ahead. So we trade them, but my overall view is overall bullish. But you might be aware that a pullback here might possibly put a little pressure on some of the shares. They were doing well today, Thursday. Crude oil was up today, and Pioneer Natural Gas, I think, was up 6-7 points. And they're being acquired by Exxon, and Chevron just took out, about to acquire Hess, big oil producer, says consolidation in the industry, and I think that's overall positive for the shares. You know, who knows, maybe someone will come after Occidental Petroleum and make Warren Buffett really happy. So in any event, bullish, you know, be prepared for maybe, you know, $7-$8 to the downside in crude oil short term, but still overall positive.
Anything going on the geocosmic front?
Keep looking. We keep getting disasters, you know, around the planet, earthquakes and storms, and there's some, you know, huge storm in the news the last couple of days in Europe, and I mean, all kinds of fun stuff going on. There have been some solar flare activity, nothing super serious, but we get reports every day. You go to spaceweather.com and you can pull up some of the solar activity going on. You know, the planet is really in a state of turmoil. I mean, we've had so many, when you think about it, but there's 47 active volcanoes on the planet. We've got storms, earthquakes, historic, you know, temperatures in recent months, just a lot of stuff, and I don't attribute it to global warming. I'm not a believer of that at all. I believe in, you know, just natural, cyclic events on the planet, but, you know, they attribute a lot of that to man-made stuff. Well, we've had those serious moves in the climate when man wasn't around and that we didn't have the Industrial Revolution, so I don't accept much of that. Majority of scientists agree with me, but the press seems to support the global warming people. But in any event, yeah, just a lot of turmoil around the planet. You know, it's not given a lot of press attention, but, you know, earthquakes, thousands of people dying in these events. And unfortunately, we've had the Israeli war now and we've lost a few thousand people, but that's a small scale compared to what the planet does to us on a regular basis with storms and earthquakes and so forth. So just part of life. And at the moment, there's nothing appears to be imminent on the horizon that I see. I certainly don't have any track on any asteroid headed our way. So we're just taking it a day at a time. We do have the winter solstice coming up on December 20th to 22nd time frame, and my theory about the solstices and equinoxes, which, as I put into my newsletter, are usually time frames where you get sort of cyclical changes of direction in the markets. So September 2021st was around a time frame for a cyclical time frame in the market, and the June solstice, equinox, I'm sorry, was also the event. March was as well. So we have another one coming up in December. So it's generally a couple of weeks either side of it. So if the market is rallying into that time frame, it's probably a top. We sell off into the middle or third week of December, probably a bottom. And we just got to watch the seasonal tendencies of the planet, which are widely ignored by financial people. But if you track long enough, you'll see sometimes huge change of direction in all markets, not necessarily the stock market, around the seasonal patterns of the planet. So we watch them, try to tie them in with what else is happening, you know, economically and also what's happening in the charts. And, you get some nice correlation with those. So, yeah, that's my best report on the geocosmic at the moment.
Mark, thank you so much for the update.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
My guest has been Mark Leibovit, editor and publisher of the Leibovit VR newsletters, also known as VRTrader.com. If you have any questions for Mark or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. We'll ask that question for you. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.